From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Following an almost unanimous vote in Congress seeking to curb his ability to conduct foreign policy for the country, U.S. President Donald Trump took his show on the road to West Virginia and came out swinging.
The failed voices in Washington who oppose our movement are the exact same people who gave us one terrible trade deal after another, who gave us one foreign policy disaster after another, and who sacrificed our sovereignty, our wealth, and our jobs. They gave them away. We don't need advice from the Washington swamp.
Trump hit a number of familiar themes.
The question for Democrats, all Democrats, including those in Congress, is whether they are on the side of the voters or are they on the side of the special interests. The reason why Democrats only talk about the totally made-up Russia story is because they have no message, no agenda, and no vision. They don't talk about the all-time high stock market. They don't talk about reforms to the VA or about manufacturing jobs we're bringing back to America by the hundreds of thousands. They don't talk about the Keystone Pipeline that I immediately approved or the Dakota Access Pipeline.
And the president had a message for those members of Congress, the 419 in the House and the 98 in the Senate, who seem more preoccupied with Moscow than with Washington.
The Russia story is a total fabrication. It's just an excuse for the greatest loss in the history of American politics. That's all it is. It just makes them feel better when they have nothing else to talk about. What the prosecutors should be looking at are Hillary Clinton's 33,000 deleted emails. Should be looking at the paid Russian speeches and the owned Russian companies, or let them look at the uranium she sold that is now in the hands of very angry Russians. Most people know there were no Russians in our campaign. There never were. We didn't win because of Russia. We won because of you. That I can tell you. We won because we totally outworked the other side. We won because millions of patriotic Americans voted to take back their country. Have you seen any Russians in West Virginia or Ohio or Pennsylvania? Are Are there any Russians here tonight? Any Russians? They can't beat us at the voting booths. So they're trying to cheat you out of the future and the future that you want. They're trying to cheat you out of the leadership you want with a fake story that is demeaning to all of us, and most importantly, demeaning to our country and demeaning to our Constitution. I just hope the final determination is a truly honest one, which is what the millions of people who gave us our big win in November deserve, and what all Americans who want a better future want and deserve. Democrat lawmakers will have to decide. They can continue their obsession with the Russian hoax, or they can serve the interests of the American people.
Well, for more on all that, we spoke with Mark Sloboda. He's an American living in Moscow and a senior lecturer in international relations at Moscow State University. So Trump comes out swinging finally after this, 419-3 in the House and 98-2 in the Senate. And man, that bill is, some of the sins of Russia are, you know, occupying its own territory in South Ossetia and Abkhazia. And I'm surprised that they don't want to sanction Russia for occupying Moscow.
I tell you, this Trump's speech, and you know, we have to take Trump with a huge grain of salt.
Oh, hell yeah. A salt tablet.
salt tablet. But I think we need to separate Trump on foreign policy from Trump on domestic policy. Because they are quite two different beasts, and there's a lot of real legitimacy criticism of Trump on domestic policy, but he is provoking a debate on foreign policy that no other political figure in the U.S. has been able to provoke. And he's trying to enact a dramatic change towards a realist foreign policy for the U.S. He's not having a very good job of it, because the deep state has been sabotaging him all along. Yeah. Some members of his own cabinet have been sabotaging him.
Wow.
Obviously, a huge number of leakers from the deep state. But now Congress is openly declaring war on Trump's foreign policy, on the executive branch. They are usurping constitutionally granted powers of the executive branch, the presidency, to govern foreign policy. And now with this latest bill and prohibitions against the president removing it without their review, and they are going further with this foreign policy. They're going to try to micromanage the U.S. foreign policy through legislation for the next few years, and that's dangerous. You know, it's as dangerous a precedent, if not more so, as Obama's drone warfare, right? Something that will be carried on now, and pulled out whenever one political party or the other or both feel that it is necessary. It is an extremely dangerous precedent, and
You don't have
to like Trump.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry. Make that point first. Go ahead.
Yeah. You don't have to like Trump, and you don't have to like Russia or Russia under the government of President Putin. But Trump was elected on an explicit foreign policy platform of détente with Russia. And he made lots of noise, or whatever the reality, made lots of rhetoric about ending the wasteful policies of regime change, which he saw as expensive and counterproductive.
Yep.
And he won on that platform.
That's right.
That is the one thing that Trump was consistent about during the entire campaign, and has tried to be to a large extent while in office.
Yeah.
And That was the elected foreign policy. Do the American people no longer have any say in their foreign policy.
And that's the point of divergence between the establishment and Trump. And it was also the strongest point of support that I saw evident at the RNC. When he made those points, he got standing ovations from a basketball stadium full of Republicans.
You know, Donald Trump went to the Republican Party and said the Iraq War was a huge Titanic mistake, and they cheered him for it.
That's right, they did. And so now, you know, you're talking about this, you know, these sea changes in policy that are at least being suggested by Trump. We're seeing a sea change in policy with Congress also. This is, with the exception of a couple of leaders, instead of Boehner, we have Ryan, for example. This is the same Congress that in 2011 and 2014 would have allowed the President of the United States to go to war. In fact, in the case of 2011, there was litigation by 10 members of Congress who were lone soldiers in this effort, allowing the president to conduct, not just declare, but conduct wars without congressional approval, in violation of the Constitution, in violation of the War Powers Act, even in violation of the expansive powers that the courts have given in interpreting those things. They were hands off completely. And now on the question of sanctions being imposed or withdrawn on Russia, Iran, and North Korea, they have 98-2 and 419-3 majorities seeking to impose their power over the president's constitutional power. That's a huge sea change.
Well, I guess if we should give Trump credit for anything, it's for ending bipartisanship, at least on one issue, on himself.
Imperial presidency, the imperial presidency.
Bringing unity to the Congress, at least on the issue of him.
Yeah, there you go. That's true, yep.
And at the same time, we've got Congress debating the continuation of the 2001 AUMF, the Armed Use of Military Force, which the U.S. has used to justify every military action that they've taken in the Middle East as against terrorism, against Al-Qaeda.
Right.
The absurdity of that, when what they've been doing, at least up until Trump, and again, give him credit there again for ending the CIA's illegal program to arm, train, and pay the salaries of Islamists allied with Al-Qaeda in Syria, literally allied with Al-Qaeda, allied and embedded within the much larded Al-Qaeda, serving as, you know, the front men for providing weapons and money, and such as the advanced TOW missiles, which then Al-Qaeda has made regular use of. And he has put an end to that. But that was done under the aegis of this AUMF. So under an act designed to fight Al-Qaeda, Obama was illegally arming, training, and salaring tens of thousands of Islamists allied with Al-Qaeda.
Right.
That's the insanity of it. Right. But this whole Russian hacking story has gone so hysterical, so neo-McCarthyite, so insane. And there's so little evidence for it. What the country really needs is, out of the hyper-partisan atmosphere of this past election, to have a grown-up discussion about the realities of cyber warfare and cybersecurity in the world that we live in. Russia has been pushing the U.S. for years to agree to, you know, new Cold War rules of the road for global cyber warfare, and the U.S. has already blown them off. Right. And the U.S. continually, its media continually presents the U.S. as some kind of saint or angel when it comes to cyber warfare, when the U.S. is by far the first and the biggest perpetrator of it. And we've seen this in the most glaring examples of Flame and Stuxnet and these other viruses. I mean, Stuxnet was designed to cripple, to physically affect Iranian nuclear reactors being built by Russia in Iran. And just think of the possible consequences if that had caused something
serious,
physical. Like a meltdown. I mean, We can make all kind of arguments about what it was designed to do, but the fact that it was physically affecting a nuclear reactor or the centrifuges involved in the higher enrichment of uranium should scare people.
Hey, you go into Indian Point up here with a shotgun, okay, with salt pellets, and shoot at somebody in the control room and see what they charge you with and how it gets presented, that you risk the people of New York City with a meltdown because who knows what could have happened if the shotgun went off and hit the wrong switch or whatever. And while they're crashing control systems in a nuclear power plant, you know, the same speculations could be made about the potential consequences. And of course, that, you know, they get dismissed when you talk about it because the U.S. did it. But, you know, let's not be historical just because I'm in New York here. Ahistorical, I mean. You know, the internet was a weapon of war invented by the Pentagon.
Yeah, and it has continued along those purposes through multiple departments now. Okay. And part of the problem was during the Obama years, the CIA was given the funding and the wherewithal to basically develop their own NSA within the CIA, replicating the duties of the no such agency, the National Security Agency, with even less oversight and controls over it. And there have been plenty of articles, The Guardian and elsewhere, exposing about the Pentagon's social media manipulation programs. They're the so-called Pentagon sock puppet army, and then they're quite open about their willingness, both in the military and the covert agencies, to manipulate the internet, to manipulate social media, to create fake accounts, to create fake news stories in other countries. And we know that that propaganda has been used against American citizens at home, and even in Afghanistan, we saw quite clearly that these Pentagon psyops were being used on visiting senators in Afghanistan to continue keeping that war running.
Well, they cleared the legal road for all of that too. There were legal prescriptions against, for example, you know, the U.S. intel propagandists, the Voice of America, you know, Radio Free Europe, all of that, from being published or reproduced inside the United States. And the legal theory was you can't tax people and use the money to propagandize them. And though that whole legal regime has been wiped out in the past 4 years.
Dismantled, completely dismantled. Yep. And no one had a problem with doing it because it was the Obama administration doing it. Yeah. And Obama was the good guy, and we trust him. And even if you trusted Obama, which I made the mistake of when he was being elected and almost immediately regretted it and saw through it. But he has been behind this whole thing. He has been behind an increase in the CIA of such dramatic powers and funding, of which we can only see the tip of the iceberg of it, obviously, but the tip of the iceberg alone. I mean, for years, that one of the neocon arguments about Syria they were trying to say is that Obama hasn't done enough, that his mere illegally arming, training, and salarying of the rebels wasn't enough. He wasn't giving them enough. He wasn't shifting to overt regime change, bombing Damascus and the rest of the country like Hillary Clinton made clear she wanted to do. He wasn't creating no-fly or safety zones or safe zones, whatever they wanted to call them, you know, which we saw in Libya leads directly to regime change. Right. They quickly turn into from no-fly zones to bombing zones to bombing everything that moves on the ground or even doesn't move
zones.
So on. But they gave Obama on a pass on all of this. And this cyber warfare, this is a reality of the world we live in. And Michael Hayden, who was the director of both the CIA and the NSA just prior to Obama and then through Obama's years, he's given some very interesting speeches on the matter. And one of the most has been reported in The Hill and elsewhere, a speech he gave to the Heritage Foundation, our old friends at the Heritage Foundation. And he said that penetrating, using, you know, cyber warfare to cyber espionage the political parties in foreign countries, He said, that's what we do. Game on. Mm. I would hate to testify under oath to Congress that I have never done the same. He said, that's what I call honorable state espionage.
Wow.
That's what he said. And he went on another interview to say as well that cyber warfare operations against Russia are being conducted 24 hours a day, every day, against Russia. And I think we can presume against China and other countries as well. So that is the grown-up discussion we need to have about cyber warfare, cyber espionage. What are we doing to other countries? What is being done in our name that we are either not aware of or only partially aware of and largely ignore and then present ourselves as ignorant victims?
Right.
What are other countries doing to us? What has become the norm when the U.S. refuses to agree on rules of the road for the cyber warfare and so on? Because I'm perfectly – we have to talk about the specifics of this because they always say Russia hacked the election or Russia meddled in the election. Well, what do you mean?
Right.
Then when we get down to specifics, it all suddenly gets extremely murky with very little influence. If we ignore the addendum of pages of a 2012 rehashed report attacking RT and Sputnik, I mean, the absolutely hilarious. They even included and this was in the official intelligence assessment of Russian hacking. They included a dozen pages about RT, which they included, for instance, Abby Martin's show.
Yeah, right.
Which was off the air of RT, left right. RT more than a year before the campaign even started.
Right. Yeah, like in
somehow she's listed in there. Yeah. Okay, we get it. You don't like what Russian media has to say. That's right. Okay. Russia doesn't like what the entirety of your media has to say either. But that's not meddling in anyone's election. Let's be serious here. So the actual arguments of hacking all have to do with the Democratic National Committee server. That's it. And this server was supposedly penetrated by two hacking groups, two entities, which some people affiliate with the GRU, the Russian military, the equivalent of the DIA, and the FSB, groups that are maybe contractors, private or maybe official actors of these agencies. Now, cybersecurity experts like Jeffrey Carr at Taiya Global, one of the U.S.'s premier cyber warfare gurus who has given advice, testified to the Pentagon and numerous other agencies, he says that there actually is no affirmative identification that these groups – and these groups are amorphous. They morph and change and you know, members and so on. He says there's no actual – clear identification that these are the GRU and the FSB. So already that casts some of what has been, you know, accused quite soundly, you know, from the top to the bottom of right. society of happening. But then there are also reports that the DNC servers were also hacked by up to 20 other entities. So there was a bunch of hacking of the DNC going on there. Then we come to the fact that the DNC refused to turn over their servers to the FBI or the NSA. We have this condemnation of Russia and sanctions which threaten all of international relations, bring us to a Cold War, potentially to nuclear war. And the FBI, the NSA, the CIA, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence never even touched or investigated the purported crime scene.
Right.
There is no evidence of hacking, or that Russia hacked the election, or the DNC server specifically, because they didn't. And there can't be any evidence because they never actually looked at it. It's all based off of the reports of this CrowdStrike, this private cybersecurity company hired by the Democratic Party for this. And the owner, Alpertovich, of the co-founder and owner of CrowdStrike, is linked to the Clinton campaign. He is a Russian Ukrainian American dissident with links to the Kiev regime, the putsch that, right, that the U.S. helped install there. And right, we know that there are quite credible, Politico has reported it, actual allegations of collusion and meddling in the election between the Clinton campaign and the Ukrainian regime in Kiev.
For sure.
And this is through Andrei Chalupa, who has Alexandra Chalupa, I believe, who was doing opposition research on Trump. So this is all linked. Oh, and Alpertovich also happens to be a fellow of the Atlantic Council, which, if you're should be familiar with them, they're a completely pro-NATO, pro-American military hegemony around the world, anti-Russian think tank.
Right.
Now, we have to take everything they say as gospel, because the FBI and the CIA, and at least partially the NSA, seem to say that, well, you know, whatever they say, that's what happened. We don't have to actually investigate.
Right.
But I'm perfectly willing to believe that Russia was spying on those servers, and probably the Republican Party as well. Why? Because our own NSA CIA director says that's what we do to their party and to everyone else. WikiLeaks exposed outright that the CIA was physically infiltrating every French political party during the last election, during 2012.
Right.
No one even bats an eye. All right. And certainly cyber espionage-wise, we can believe it well. But the actual accusation of the supposed meddling goes a lot further, and it's about them transferring that information then to WikiLeaks, which made it available to the world. And the information specifically was about the most damning, at least, was about the Hillary Clinton campaign colluding with officials in the DNC to rig the primary for themselves. Now, there's never any discussion of the substance of that. I mean, our democracy is a fraud because the DNC now admits in court, where they're being taken by Bernie Sanders supporters, that if we want to, we're allowed to your vote in the primary doesn't actually matter. And we could decide our candidate in smoke-filled rooms if we wanted to. That's the actual arguments of the DNC lawyers.
Right.
And I used to organize for the Democratic Party, and I'm shocked by that. I mean, I knew our democracy was corrupt with campaign finance and lobbying and the inner machinery of the parties. But to admit this so flagrantly that, you know, the only actual supposedly Democratic vote that you have in this country is to decide which of the two Pepsi, Coke Pepsi choice you want at the end, that even the primaries are corrupt and rigged.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's a real condemnation. That is the actual assault on our democracy. Now, WikiLeaks says that's not what happened. WikiLeaks says they got their information from a whistleblower. And everyone ignores that, because suddenly, from being loved by the liberals of the country during the Bush years, WikiLeaks is now the enemy. WikiLeaks is suddenly a Russian agent because they released these Clinton and then Podesta emails. I at least personally, as a military veteran, I'm sorry to say, I have more faith in WikiLeaks, which has a perfect record, than in the CIA and the other U.S. intelligence agencies who sold us a pack of lies about the Iraq war, Kuwaiti incubator babies before that, Libyan genocide.
Freedom fighters in Afghanistan. Let's go back to 1979.
Freedom fighters in Afghanistan, moderate jihadis in Syria.
Yeah, right.
And let's talk about some of the other fake news. Because we hear a lot of fake news accusations at Russia and supposedly armies of Kremlin troll bots everywhere that are generating fake news, maybe in Macedonia. I don't know. Macedonian fake news bots ruined the election for Clinton. And first of all, that is this whole idea that you need to invent these conspiracy theories and manufacture an outside enemy to deny agency to half your own population who votes against you. This is the classic sign of a failed and paranoid regime losing its grip on power.
And
this is
reality.
The kind of things that we accuse other countries of.
Yeah, and on reality, too. We're going to have to pick it up there, Mark, next week. But I'm just watching this stuff with another level of amazement, you know, almost every day now. Thank you for your time. Talk to you again next week.
Bye, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.